excellent turnout today at Willowbrook. In fact, if I counted correctly, there were 24 of us and four of them. So 6-to-1 ratio. But appreciate all those who went. By the way, don't forget the goat money for widows in India. One of the ladies was talking to me and told me this evening that she and a friend wanted to go in halves on a goat. And I said, that was fine. And she said, I want the back half. It was the back half, wasn't it, Susan? Yeah, okay. Anyway, she and Rose are going in halves on a goat. And when she first said she won't talk about a goat, I thought she meant Sonny. But we are still collecting the money for the goats. If you'd like to contribute to that, I'm not sure. Ned, we're at what? 4,300. So we're about 40% of the way to the goal of $10,000. And in fact, just a quick update on that. I talked with Jim Waldron last week, and he's thinking about possibly starting raising our own goats over there if we can find a place. Not only would this provide some income for some of the local brethren there raising the goats, but also we're cutting out the middleman because they purchase a lot of goats for the widows in India. So he's talking about that as a possibility, as a source of goats. And in recent years, the price of goats has just escalated. We were buying them for about $30 a goat. Maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, and they're up to 60, anywhere from 60 to 65, depending on the time of year it is. But anyway, appreciate all those who've contributed to the Goat Fund for the Widows, and continue to do so if you possibly can. Of course, tonight is family Bible time, so I've tried to shorten the lesson just a little bit, and invariably when I think it's going to be shorter, it doesn't work out, so I warned Peter, it's supposed to be shorter, but no guarantee. I think we're all aware of the fact that, generally speaking, the millennial generation is far less Christian, and I use that term in the broad sense, but the millennial generation is far less Christian and biblically oriented than previous generations. And I dare say this comes as no surprise to you if you have visited around in congregations in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, when was the last time you visited a congregation on a vacation or visiting family somewhere? You go in, when was the last time you visited a congregation that was filled with the 20 to 30 plus generation? Sadly, I've visited many congregations in recent years that have virtually no young people of any age. And perhaps some of our college congregations would be different in this regard, but I think they would be the exception rather than the norm. The fact is, brethren, we're losing many of our young people. In fact, we're losing the majority. Sadly, we're a generation. Our nation has become a nation that has very little time for, very little use for Christianity, for things of a spiritual nature. In fact, generally speaking, we assume that all millennials are less interested in church and Christianity and spiritual things. And I suppose that should not come as a surprise to us, because they're simply acting upon what the generation before them started, only they have gone a little further. You know, we look about and how many parents simply warm the pew. They come in, they attend, they go home, and that's the extent of their Christianity. But they're always there, but they don't live it outside the assembly. And so their young people, their children have taken it to the next step. Why bother if we're simply going to go and warm a pew? You know, statistically, brotherhood-wide, we are losing well over 50% of our young people by the time they reach the age of 25. In fact, that number is much higher in some areas, but that's the general average. Thankfully, some statistics that came out in October of this year give reason perhaps for some hope. There's a magazine called Relevant. Relevant magazine carried an article by David Kinneman, who is the president of the Barna Group. And the Barna Group is arguably the leading research group on religious statistics in America. And Mr. Kinneman shared some statistics that confirm that our young people today, young adults as a whole, are moving away from Christianity. And that was no surprise when we read that.
And I emphasize the fact that he uses the term Christian there in the denominational sense, so I'm not using it in the same way that he does here. But what Mr. Kinnaman sees in these studies is that young people who are staying faithful are far more grounded in their faith than their parents and the generation before them. And according to these studies in October of this year, these young people see the value of reading and understanding and living the Bible in their daily lives. So basically what he's saying is those who are staying in the church, those who are staying religious, if you will, are more committed than their parents. And I found this to be quite interesting. He made a statement here that I think is very revealing. Talking about the millennials, he says, and this is quote, "They have a more holistic understanding that theology matters, that scripture matters, that worship should be taken seriously, that being a Christian is a whole life commitment rather than something you just do on Sundays." End of quote. And when I read this statement, I couldn't help but wonder, and maybe you're wondering as you're reading along with me there, but I couldn't help but wonder why the difference? Why the shift in attitudes in the millennial generation that's remaining faithful? Why are they more committed than their parents in so many cases? You know, going back to the poll I mentioned a moment ago, Mr. Kinnaman chalks it up to a change in culture. And he points out that past generations could claim to be Christians with very little backlash. You could say, oh yes, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, I'm a follower, I'm a disciple, whatever term they use. And there was little or no backlash with them. It cost them nothing other than a couple of hours on Sunday and maybe on Wednesday night to attend the services and maybe drop a few dollars in the plate. They were not forced to count the cost as Jesus taught in Luke chapter 14 and verse 28. He says the millennial generation today is different in the sense that they could lose friends, they could have educational or career difficulties when they say, yes, I am a believer. Yes, I am a Christian. He said there is more of a cost today for their generation than our generation and those before us. You know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you could say, I'm a Christian, and most people say, well, that's great. And many times it's, I am too. Today in the workplace, you say, I'm a Christian, or you start to talk about God, you start to talk about the Bible, some people get offended. I know one of our members here was told on the job that he was not to discuss religious matters with his coworkers. You know, the workforce is no longer religious friendly. You know, it's fine to discuss atheism and other isms, but you cannot discuss Christianity. And Mr. Kinnaman points out that for many young people today, it's simply not worth the cost. They're not willing to pay the price of potentially having problems at school or on the job. And so they just quit. They leave. They refuse to be half-hearted in their commitment to Christianity. But on the other hand, he points out those who were staying, they've drawn the line in the sand. They realize that it's not politically correct. They realize that it's countercultural, but they are staying faithful. And so from his study, he says there is a strong nucleus of Christians who have risen to the forefront. Now, based on the article, and I've only hit a couple of excerpts from his article here, but I think there's some important lessons that can be of great value to us. Because let's face it, as preachers, as elders, as deacons, as parents, as church members in general, we are concerned about how to keep our young people. Whether we're talking about young teens, whether we're talking about high school graduates, whether we're talking about college, whether we're talking about the college graduates. We all want to know, what can we do to keep them? How can we attract them? And we look around and we see all kinds of things have been tried in the religious world and even in the Lord's church. Gimmicks oftentimes to try to attract and to keep them interested. And yet sadly in most cases these gimmicks simply have not worked. I want to mention two things just quickly. First of all, if our young people are to remain faithful, if we are to keep our young people after they go off to college and come back, God has got to be made important to them. Let's face it, many
of my generation and the generation to follow. Many remain faithful simply because mom and dad were faithful. Why are you a Christian? Because mom and dad were Christian. Why do you attend there? Because my family's always attended there. God was not important to them. It was simply something they did. You know, it's kind of like mama was a school teacher and her mama was a school teacher. I'm going to be a school teacher. Or whatever the career might be. And certainly that's not a good reason. Actually, this truth applies not just to the millennials, but to people of all age groups. If people are to remain faithful, if we're to keep new converts, if we're to keep young people, if we're to keep old people, God has got to be made important to them. Now, that may sound simplistic on the surface, and yet when you begin to delve into it and think about it, it's really a profound principle here. Think about, we are a generation with so many options in our face at any given time. More than ever before. Think about it. We have hundreds of digital channels on Dish Network or cable or whatever we happen to have filled with movies and entertainments. We have sporting activities 365 days a year. I mean, anything from underwater hockey to polo. Sports I've never even heard of. You go on the sports channel and you can watch it. And I guess some people do or they wouldn't keep airing it. With the freedom to travel so cheaply, you know, you can hop on a plane and you can go to Miami for the weekend. Go out west, see your family, wherever. With cell phones, we can call and talk with our loved ones anytime we like. It doesn't cost a dime. See, I remember when it was expensive long distance. You know, phone calls cost money. Dad's here, but I'll say it anyway. I remember him saying, you know, it's not cheap. Keep that phone call short. Now we call, I talk to my brother every other day, I talk to Michael almost every day, it doesn't cost me anything, but it takes time. We can shop for most anything we want 24 hours a day, either on television, on networks, through Amazon, we never have to even leave home to do our shopping. For many people, especially the young, Christianity and spiritual matters simply are not high on the priority list, because here I've got sporting events, I've got trips I can make, I've got games I can participate in, you know, computer games on the internet. And on the list of options that we have to choose from with ways to use our time. And the fact is, we have a limited amount of time, and so we can't engage in everything we want to. And the older I get, the more I realize I'm not going to get to do the things that I, you know, I've said one time I want to do. There's just simply not enough hours in the day. And so part of growing, part of maturing today means you have to learn to be economical in your decision making. What's important to me? Watching the polo match or going to Bible class? Sitting there watching the QVC network, watch them sell whatever happens to be on the list today? Or studying my Bible? There's a lot of things competing for our time. Especially for young people, when you take into consideration school, homework, perhaps part-time jobs, sporting activities and all. And many young people are not willing to engage in tradition simply for the sake of tradition. In other words, they're not going to spend the time with worship in Bible study simply because we've always done that. I've got better things to do. I've got more important things to use my time for. And so, you know, I don't mean to sound ugly, but, you know, at least they're being honest. They're not being hypocritical about it. Well, I've got to go to services. I've got to be at Bible class tonight, or people are going to talk about me. The elders will come see me. I'll get a letter. They've simply chosen to choose other things as far as their time. Why? Because we've not made God, we've not made Christianity important to them. It's not a priority. Today, those who were staying in the church, they see and they understand the importance of being a Christian, of being faithful. It's because they've made a decision. It's not something they've inherited. It's not something that's rubbed off from mom and dad. They're faithful because they've made that commitment. On the other hand, those who were leaving the church are doing so under the impression that they have better things they can spend their time on. And frankly, in speaking in the broad sense of Christianity in the religious world,
In many cases, that may be true. They're attending various churches that are offering nothing in the way of spiritual growth. They're not offering them teaching. They're not offering them the simplistic gospel of Jesus Christ. They're offering them games and gadgets and gimmicks and feel good and philosophy and entertainment. Anything and everything except what they need. And as I mentioned a moment ago, oftentimes they realize that, hey, if I am a Christian, it's going to cost me something. It's going to cost me time. It's going to cost me effort. And they're just simply not willing to make that effort. I've got better things to do. In fact, I've had people tell me that when you talk, why don't you come to services anymore? Well, I've got more important things to do. Well, you and I know there is nothing more important than worshiping and serving God faithfully, but they've not come to know that. Let me ask you something. How many of you plan on leaving $1 billion, and I'm saying B with a billion, or billion with a B, how many of you plan to leave $1 billion to each of your children? Raise your hand. Come on, don't be shy. I don't see a single hand. Why not? Is it because you don't love your children? Is it because you plan on taking it with you? I'll tell you why. Because you can't give something you don't have. Ned, you don't have $1 billion to leave your kids, do you? You can't leave it. Meadows, you don't have $1 billion to leave Cole, do you? Cole, you can forget it. You say, what's that have to do with spirituality? In the same respect, if the Bible, if prayer, if worship, if serving God are not important to you, you can't leave that to your children. You can't instill a faith in them that you don't possess. And that's the problem in so many cases. You've got lukewarm moms and dads encouraging their kids, you need to do this, you shouldn't be doing that. But they themselves are not doing what they ought to be doing. And so you can't leave a faith to your children that you don't first possess yourself, and that's important. You can't be lukewarm and expect them to be on fire for the Lord. You can't build them up in the faith unless you're first built up in the faith. The text that Derek read for us a few moments ago is one that we need to be shouting from the housetops today. And I know it's Old Testament scripture, but Deuteronomy 6, 5, and 7, God says, parents. He's not talking to the church, and I realize the church wasn't in existence yet, but he's not talking to the church. He's not talking to the religious leaders. He's not talking to the synagogue schools. He's talking to mom and dad. He says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. Summary, total commitment to God. Not lukewarm, not part-time. You love God with all your heart and with all your mind. Notice verse 6. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. See, you got to have it first. Have it in your heart, he says. And thou, verse 7, shall teach them my word. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Now, I don't know if you've ever studied these verses carefully, but look. They contain three very simple and yet three very profound commands. They were to love God with all their being, number one. That was a prerequisite. Number two, God's word was to be in their hearts. And thirdly, they were to teach these divine principles to their children on a regular basis. It didn't matter. He said, if you're at home when you're traveling, you teach them my word. He said, when you're in bed at night, you teach them to your children. When you're sitting up during the daytime, you teach them to the children. Why, God? Why this emphasis on parents teaching their children day and night, at home, away, wherever? Why this emphasis? Because it was the only way their children were going to learn God's will for them. It's not born into us. It's not part of our genetic makeup. If our children are what they ought to be, it's because we have instructed, we've taught them. They would learn God's will by word of mouth and by godly example of mom and dad. And again, I would emphasize that this command is just as important today as it was in the Old Testament in principle. As parents, it's our job to love God with all our hearts, with all our souls, with all our minds, and to pass that love, that faith, onto our children. Think about it. If God is important to you, if the church is important to you, if faith, if spiritual matters are important to you, you've got a much better chance of passing those things on to your children and making it important for them. On the other hand, if these things are only mildly important to you, don't expect them to be a priority with your children. They watch what we do more than what we say. You know, older generations had plenty of lukewarm people in the pews. Many attended because they thought they were supposed to. You know, mom and dad said we did. But there wasn't a real meaningful commitment there. It was simply something they did out of habit. I'm here to tell you, the generation today, they're smart enough to see we're not going to waste our time doing something that's not meaningful to us. And as I said a moment ago, there's a lot of things competing for their time, for their energy. And that's what we're up against. You know, as parents, we only have 10, 15, maybe 20 years to show them what's really important, what really matters in life. We've got to take advantage of that opportunity, make the most use of that time. And it's fine to stress school and grades. It's fine to stress sports and other school activities. But we need to always let them know that they take second place to God and Christianity. God's got to be made important to them if we expect to keep our teens and our young adults. But very quickly, if we want our young people to remain faithful, we've got to raise the bar, brethren. Bible classes, devotions, and other programs that keep our young people from progressing on to deeper teaching, they won't get it. At the risk of insulting anybody, any congregation, I'm going to tell you something. The educational program of the Lord's church is lame. Overall, it's lame. I'm not saying the material's not sound. Oftentimes we have teachers who are not prepared. We have teachers who were not familiar with the material. We have teachers who were not excited. I know, I've been in the classes growing up. I've seen it in other congregations. The material we use is oftentimes so watered down and so diluted, it holds no interest to them. And I've had parents say, oh, well, you can't expect little Johnny here to learn these things and to understand. Little Johnny is studying biology and chemistry and algebra and geometry. Don't tell me he can't understand the principles of Scripture. But you see, we've dumbed it down to the point that it's boring oftentimes to many of them. You may not want to hear that, but it's the truth. Again, we've been brought up in an age where we can choose something else. If that show doesn't appeal to me, click, I go to the next one. If I don't want to watch that ball game, click, I go to another game. If I don't like this video game on my computer, I can go to another video game. If I don't like the person I'm talking to on Skype, I can click, talk to somebody else. Many have lost interest in Bible class, not because of their lack of interest, but because of the way they're being taught. Boring Bible classes that do not challenge our young people simply don't cut it. Some people have equated boring with sound. No, we can have sound Bible classes doctrinally that at the same time can be interesting, that can be challenging, and can even be made exciting and interesting. There's nothing more exciting than Old Testament history. Read the book of Joshua. Read the book of Judges. It's very interesting if you take the time. But you see, we've got to make it interesting to our young people. And yet, how many congregations are content to give sixth graders nothing more than a coloring book with a couple of verses in it and call it a Bible class? And if I can editorialize here, part of the problem is that much of the Bible class material being offered to the Lord's church today is co-opted. And by that I simply mean it's sold to denominations of all stripe. They simply change the cover on it. And I know this for a fact. You can verify it. And so they're not going to put anything that's doctrinally strong because it will offend this religious group or it'll offend that one. And so they make a generic workbook in many cases
that will appeal to anybody and everybody and not offend anybody, and it won't teach anybody. We've got to get back, brethren, to teaching sound Bible classes, because we're not going to be able to compete with Netflix and video games and iPhone apps with classes that are boring and uninteresting by teachers who really don't want to be in there, who are simply putting in their time because they were told to do it. Preachers, elders, and Bible class teachers have to see to it that we stir the interest of our young people with God's Word. We have the greatest story ever written. We have some of the most exciting material. And I realize not every book of the Bible is exciting. I understand that. But there's a lot of exciting material there. If we're excited, hopefully they're going to be excited. If we act bored, they're going to be bored. And again, we've got to raise the bar. I can remember as a youngster, we had workbooks that we took home and we were expected to bring them back with them worked. Today, parents said, "You got to be kidding." I can still remember Wednesday night, Dad said, "You got your workbook?" "Yes, sir." "Is it filled out?" Kind of mumble. "What?" Wasn't always filled out. But we were expected to take those workbook home and do them to answer the questions. Today, some parents get up in arms at the very idea. I mean, we had memory verses in our Bible classes. You suggest that today? You want my child to learn verses? But then we got to raise the bar. Or they're not going to be interested. Young people want to be challenged. And don't tell me they can't be. I mean, anybody that can figure out all these apps, you know, Matt and some of the teenagers still helping me learn to use this silly iPhone. In fact, if I have a problem, I call Matt. "Hey, Matt, how do I make the phone do this?" He said, "It's easy." "Well, it is if you know how." And don't laugh. I know a lot of you in the same boat. You've told me. Our young people are some of the brightest. They can learn. They want to learn. But we have got to do our part. And we need to do some strong. And I'm not just talking about Alki Road. I'm talking about the church in general. We need to give some serious thought to our educational programs. Because we're not challenging our young people. We're afraid of running them off. We're afraid of embarrassing someone. Beloved, we need to raise the bar on our Bible classes, because the church, you've heard it said before, but it's still true, the church is only one generation away from apostasy. Within just an hour or two of this building, you can find congregations with a handful of old geezers meeting. And I don't say that ugly, but within 10 years, the doors will be shut because the youngest person there is in their 60s. I spoke down in Cincinnati a few years ago, and I won't mention the congregation, as sure as I do, some of you are kin to them. The song leader was the youngest person there. He was 40 years old. The next one was in his 60s. There were no young people. And I thought, how many years until they have to shut the doors? And they had a nice, beautiful building about the size of ours. At one time, it was a congregation of 300 people. They're gone. Now, maybe some have gone to other congregations, but many of them simply fell away. And this problem is brotherhood wide. I've talked to preachers not only in the county and in the city of Columbus, but in other states, same story. We're losing our young people. They go to college, and sadly, many of them go to college and lose their faith. Others go to college and realize, hey, there's more to do out there. Beloved, we've got to do all that we can to keep our young people. It's our responsibility as preachers, as elders, as deacons, as Bible class teachers. Not only for the good of the church, but for the good of the young people, for their souls. Because the longer they remain away, the lesser the odds are that they're going to come back and be faithful. Well, I've already gone longer than I told Peter I would. I'm going to stop, and I hope you'll think about these things. And please know that everything I've said tonight is said in love and concern, things that I honestly believe need to be said. I will say this in closing. Alki Road is blessed. We've got one of the finest college and teenage groups that you'll ever find. But I want to keep them. I don't want to look around in 10 years and say, where are all those smiling young people there? You know, there's Ned and there's Meadows and there's all the old guys, but where are the young people? Well, you know, they're gone. I don't want that. Let's work to keep our young people. Let's do what needs to be done. Think about these things. We're going to extend the invitation of Christ. If you're not a Christian, you can become one tonight, coming in faith, repenting, confessing the name of Christ, and being baptized. Or perhaps you've not been faithful as a child of God. Do what needs to be done. Make it right. Come back. Ask for the prayers of the church. Ask God's forgiveness. Will you come while we stand and while we sing?
I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore, very deeply stained with sin, sinking to rise no more. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry. From the waters lifted me, now safe.